There was a time when Rick Ankiel was the hottest phenom in the game. People were throwing around names like Bob Gibson and Sandy Koufax. He was the next one of those. And then came that fateful night on October 3rd, 2000, when something went wrong. The ball, instead of going into the catcher's mitt, went to the backstop. And then so did the next one, and the one after that, and the one after that, and the one after that. He had a serious case of what ballplayers call the yips. And after that, the adventure got even more interesting because he rehabilitated himself in the minors, came back as a pitcher, then quit the game and came back as again as an outfielder and continued along and played in the majors for seven more years. He writes about all of this in his autobiography, which is out now. It's called The Phenomenon, Pressure, the Yips, and the Pitch That Changed My Life. Rick Ankiel, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's good to be on.
It's a pleasure to have you here. If you and I went out in the hallway right now, could you throw me a 90-mile-an-hour fastball?
Yes.
No problem?
No. There's not, I mean, you don't have, it's not like there's 50,000 people out here watching. I mean, obviously that adds to the emotional system of anyone, but it's not my livelihood anymore, and it doesn't matter, and frankly, I could care less if I threw it away.
Yeah, if it hits the wall, who cares?
It's not like it's a secret. I don't like short distances, so I mean, who gives a crap?
Yeah. Let's go back to that night, mm-hmm. which I know you've talked about many, many times, and you write about it here in the book. I know that in baseball at every level, if a pitcher is throwing a no-hitter or a perfect game, no one talks to him.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you have the yips?
It's sort of the same. I think it's one of those situations where people, you know, it's one of those things where you can't say, you know, you feel like you have to say something, but they're not sure what to say. On the other side of that, especially my teammates and people that I've known for a long time, I'm sure it's frightening for them and scary at the same time, being that, hey, if it can happen to him, it can happen to anybody. You know, and part of it, I've said this before, part of the hardest part of going through it, because you can see that look in people's eyes that they're not even sure what to say to you. And it just makes you feel worse. It feels like pity, and it's hard to endure.
Were other pitchers worried it was contagious?
I'm sure they were. They're not going to come to me and talk about it. But, you know, in knowing me, you would have never thought that this would happen to me if you'd have known me before this happened. And as I said, I think that's scary. It absolutely scares people.
Mike Matheny was not behind the plate that night.
Mm-hmm.
Did that have something to do with it, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I didn't go back and watch the tape until a few years ago when we first started writing this book.
Really?
And I sat down with the writer, and I just remember looking at it and thinking how composed I looked and together I looked. Now, in some of the pitches, would he have been able to catch them? Yeah, because he was more athletic than Carlos. Carlos had a hurt back and whatever. But do I think that that would have changed things? I have no idea. And it's one of those questions that will never – well, it'll never be answered, right? We can all guess and speculate and whatever, but there's no way that I want Mike carrying around, you know, I could have saved it and this would have been different, because that's not fair to him. And it's not fair to him to say, you know, I got this knife sent to me and this would have changed. I mean, it is what it is. Things happen. Life happens. It's just what it is.
While we're on the subject of catchers, you know, Yadi has this great new deal, a huge, huge contract.
Mm-hmm. Deservingly
with the Cardinals. Absolutely. How important is a catcher to a Major League Baseball player?
Very important to a pitcher. You know, I had, you know, my personal experience, I hated to shake. I just hated to shake. I felt like the hitter now was on board. If we're shaking, we're moving, whatever. Part of that was, too, that I like to pre-grip the pitch. You know, I told this story before. I was in an 0-2 count. And Mike called a curveball, and I didn't want to shake, so I threw a fastball. Well, the hitter missed it, and Mike missed it. And then he came out to the mound, what the heck are you doing? You know, he was pissed, rightfully so.
Yeah.
And I told him, and he knew I didn't like to shake, and he got mad, and he looked at me and said, I'm going to go back there and sit down, and you throw whatever the heck you want, and I'll catch it. And the rest of the game, he just went back there and sat in the middle of the plate, and I just let it eat.
Wow.
And he framed it all, too. It was amazing.
So you don't like him to manage the pitchers you're going to throw?
It's not necessarily that. I don't mind a recommendation, but I did have an idea of what I wanted to pitch. I just hated to shake off. I already had my grip. I was ready. I had a plan, and I just didn't like to shake. So after that game, we developed a system where, you know, whether I moved my foot right or left or wiped my leg with my glove, like, he knew exactly what I wanted to throw, and we never had that. That was the end of that issue.
The pitcher was signaling the catcher
right.
as to what pitch was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And no problems from there on out?
No problems from there on out. And, that, you know, so when you say, is a catcher important? Yeah, because the relationship between the catcher and the pitcher are very important. And it, you know, you see a lot today, the way Yachty calls a game, a lot of those guys trust him and they just go with what he says. And that's important. You want to be back there and be comfortable and know that the catcher understands how you want to pitch and what you want to do and what your pitch is doing, how to get this guy out.
Who made the decision for Rick Ankiel to stop being a pitcher but now be an outfielder? You had quit the game, right?
Right. I walked in and made the decision to not pitch anymore.
That was in 05?
Correct.
Okay.
I walked in, you know, to Tony's office. Hey, I don't want to pitch anymore. I was at home not even an hour later. Scott Boras calls and says, hey, are you ready to go play again?
This is your agent.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking to myself, is nobody listening to me? Did you not just hear me that I just retired, I quit?
What done? Part of I quit don't
yeah,
you get?
Yeah, like what are you not understanding? I know you're a really bright guy. Everybody, you know. But then he says no to be an outfielder. I'm like, what? Wait, what? What's going on here? And he just asked me, do you want to do it? And I told him, I don't know. You know, I just decided to fall out of love with baseball. I'm not sure I'm ready to fall back in love with it. Hung up. You know, a few hours later, I'm trying to visualize what this is going to be like if I'm ready to do it. And I started to get excited about it. I remember I got off the couch. I started making dry swings with no bat in my hand and picturing myself hitting a home run back in the big leagues and called him back and said, I'm in 100%. He said, let me call Walt and talk to him. He calls Walt and says, Walt will be calling you back. They're on board. Walt called Jockety, who was the general manager at the time, calls and says, we're 100% on board. We'll see you tomorrow. You're an outfielder.
Had you ever played outfield at all?
In high school.
Yeah?
Yeah, high school I played first in outfield. But, you know, not in a while. And I was drafted as a pitcher, so.
Right, but you knew what the mechanics of the position were.
Right, but, you know, it'd been a long time. Right. It had been a long time, but I'd never played at that level. So, I mean, a lot of just tons of extra work as much as I get. I was out there every day with Dave McKay early and late working on the outfield, working on the swing, just felt like I was playing catch up. I was 25 at the time, and I think, you know, I mean, looking back, I had plenty of time, but I didn't feel like that. You know, here I am, 25, going back to A-ball.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had miles to catch up, so I was doing all I could to cover those miles.
So what part of that was harder, being the outfielder or being the guy who they need that bat?
What do you mean?
Is hitting or playing in the outfield the harder part about taking on that new position? Because when you're a pitcher, they don't need your bat.
Yeah, right. I would, for me, hitting is just harder in general. The outfielder, I mean, I put in a lot of extra work, but I just don't think it's as challenging. And that's why even in today's game, hitting's a premium.
Yep.
I mean, let's be honest. 3-for-10 is the Hall of Fame. So it is what it is. I mean, you can teach people how to play outfield. You can't always teach people how to hit, you know, no matter who you have teaching them. It just either they get it or they don't.
Yep. Why can't pitchers hit?
Well, what pitchers are we talking about?
Well, 99% of them.
No, that's fair.
I mean, at every level.
Yeah, no. Well, there are some that can hit, and you're right, 99% can't. But they're not out there focusing on that 100% of the time. I think the smart ones do, because especially now, if you pay attention, and even with our starting staff, when we had Tony La Russa's manager, he had us hit every day. I mean, he understood a hit there and a hit here can really help you win a ball game. I think the smart pitchers who understand that, I mean, you sneak in a hit every two games or so, you win yourself two extra games during a season. Well, that's a lot. Now you take that into arbitration and whatever else. Maybe you were an 18-game winner and now you could have been a 20-game winner.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that may be. It just seems like the skill set's completely different. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you're an athlete, I think you can at least look like you have a chance.
Yeah.
Some of them, you're right. They look like they have no chance, and they don't.
When you were doing it, when you're the starter, and you get out there, and you're having a good game, and now you come up in the rotation, it's your chance. You're in that on-deck circle. You know you're about to bat. Are you even thinking about it, or it's like, all right, let's get this over with, and I'll get back on the mound?
No, I'm trying to go deep when I was a pitcher. I'm definitely thinking about it. If you feed me a cookie, I'm going to get you, you know. And even my rookie year, you know, those first few games, I came out swinging, and that was it. They weren't laying any more cookies in there. The game was over with that.
Speaking of going deep, we've got to talk about your return to Busch Stadium when you came back up the second time around. Now you're an outfielder. A couple of things about that game I remember vividly. One was when you do come up and your name is announced by John Hewlett over the PA system there, the crowd gives you a standing ovation. That says something about Cardinals fans, doesn't it?
Yeah, it speaks volumes. And, you know, I'll always say this. This is the best fan base in the country, in the world, as far as baseball goes, in my opinion. I mean, baseball is religious here, and they supported me through thick and thin, through everything I went through. So for me to be able to come back to that moment, and you're right, I got a stand ovation before I even got into the box.
Yeah.
You know, and then I was able to hit that home run in the first game, and just a magical moment that I'll never forget. You know, if I could have sat down and wrote a script before all this played out, you know, I don't think I could have written it any differently.
Can you even remember what it was like going around the bases?
Oh, yeah. I can definitely remember. And I remember it like it was yesterday, one of those just moments, magical moments I'll never forget. I remember my legs were numb. I couldn't feel my legs. I felt like I floated around the bases. Probably ran too fast. Should have took my time a little bit more and enjoyed the crowd. But
yeah.
My adrenaline was flowing, and you know, I was excited to get back in the dugout and celebrate with everybody.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Now, there's another thing that I got to ask you about. Another famous play of yours, which I think was in Colorado. It's the play where you made a catch in center mm-hmm. field and threw a guy out at third base with one of the most beautiful throws I've ever seen.
Well, thank you. There was two that game, and the first one was with Willie Taveras. One out, runners on first and second. He was at second, which he was one of the fastest runners in the game at the time. And when the ball was hit, the play should have went to second, but I just had this feeling of, not this time. I got you. You're not going to run on me. And I let it eat. And it was perfect throw, perfect transition from the glove to my hand ball. Everything came out perfect. As soon as I let it go, I knew. I knew that I had a chance, and I thought that I had him, and I got him. And you know, because the play should have went to second to keep that runner out of scoring position.
Did the runner advance, by the way?
No, because it ended up being the third out of the inning.
Oh, okay.
There was one out, right?
Yeah.
I caught it too, and then
right, okay.
Throw. But if I don't, now there's a runner in scoring position, base
yeah.
hit, and he scores. So Tony La Russa, being Tony, came up to me after the game with that little smirk that he has and said, hey, great throw, don't F and do it again. But I don't think he was joking.
It reminds me of that scene in Major League. Where Wesley Snipes as Willie Mays Hayes makes the basket catch. He comes in, and the coach, Lou Brown, says, great catch. He says the F word.
Yep.
Don't ever do it again. So La Russa did the exact same
You're
thing
exactly
to you?
Right. Yes. Yes. With a little smile on, but, you know, I knew.
Did you ever do it again?
Chicken. Well.
Or did you always throw to the cutoff after that?
No. If I thought I had him, I let it. But it never got me in trouble.
Yeah.
And it always worked out. I worked on that relentlessly because I understood that my arm was now a weapon again. And, you know, I was more accurate from 300 feet than I was 60. And, you know, part of me when there was a runner, you know, whether it was a fly ball or a ground ball, if a runner was going to go, I was begging him to go so I had the chance to throw him out.
Yeah. It's been 16 and a half years since that October night that we talked about in the playoffs where you got hit by the yips. And your story is remarkable, and the phenomenon, your book, you talk about all these things about the ups and downs and all of that. Have other players who've had the yips come to you and said, help me?
Yes, I've talked to several other players, you know, and it's just that understanding that I understand what they're going through. And that's the thing, too, you know. Most people don't, even people that's been in baseball their entire life, unless you've been through this, you really probably don't understand the true depths of it and how dark it can be. And, you know, my heart goes out to him because I know how hard this is.
What did you tell him? What can you say will fix the problem?
Well,
is there anything?
There's not a simple solution. There's no pill. There's no, you know, hey, I wish I could tell you this and tomorrow you're going to be better. But people do learn to pitch with it. I mean, sometimes it takes a week, a month, a year, 2 years. You don't know. And that's the thing. The biggest thing is to say, hey, you know, where are you and what are you feeling? Are you feeling this and are you going through that? And to find out how deep it is and where they are exactly, you know, because there's different levels of it.
Have any of them been able to get over it and come back the way you have?
I've seen some guys get past it, some infielders. I know some pitchers that are able to compete. They're not as pinpoint as they were, but they can go out there and compete and be successful.
When you went back down to the minors, you started in the minors like everybody does. You worked your way up to the majors. Then you went back down to the minors again. You worked your way back up as a pitcher. Then you went back down to the minors again. On that third time around, the players in the minors knew your story, right?
You know, some. So, you know, it's interesting. Even when I worked for the Nationals, and I can understand this because as a young player, I was more focused on maybe my heroes. Not necessarily everybody, and even that this was in 15 when I worked for the Nationals, a lot of the young guys had no idea about my story.
Yeah, because 15 years had gone by, and that's their
it's
life.
It's gone. It's ancient. Yeah, right.
I'm only 20. What do you want me to know?
Nobody's ever told me about this before.
But when they found out that you'd been up in the show twice, did they have questions for you?
Yes.
Did they want to know, tell me stories about that?
Well, obviously now it brings credibility. And a lot of them were like, really? You did what? I've never heard of that before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it brings credibility. And not only my experiences on the field, but the stuff that I went through off the field personally, I have, you know, I had a lot to offer these guys.
You're now with Fox Sports Midwest, and that means covering Cardinals, of course.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see from the booth upstairs that you didn't see from down on the field?
Everything.
Yeah.
Meaning on the field, right? You're the one that everybody's staring at you. And now in the booth, I feel like I get to see everything as far as the field, the fans, whatever. But it's neat to be able to give your viewpoint on things and things that you see that the normal fan wouldn't.
Do you see things from a different perspective so much so that you can go in the locker room and say to one of the players, hey, let me talk to you for a second?
If I see something that I think I could help them and I know that they'd be open to criticism, so to speak, or just advice, I would. Most of the time, though, I'll leave it alone. I mean, I think guys are, you know, there's coaches down there for a reason and video, and most of the time they're trying to make an adjustment, because that's the thing. You don't know what they're trying to do, so just to step on their toes without understanding what it is that they're down there working on is, you know, I wouldn't want to do that. If I keep seeing something over and over, and maybe I know something that's helped me in the past, and I think that this thought would help them or a feeling that I had, that I might mention it.
Mm-hmm. And you probably know from your own experience, too many people telling you what to do is not good.
No, not at all. You got to pick a few people you trust and stick with that.
What's the craziest thing somebody told you to get over the yips?
You know, I wish I would have saved all these letters that I had, but I mean, it was from A to Z. I don't remember anything specifically, but some of them were just off the charts.
Were there things like wear different socks or, you know?
All of it. Socks, underwear, just anything you can think of. Don't eat certain foods or eat certain foods or just what, I mean, you know, bizarre.
You got two kids now, 6 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a catch with them, right?
Yeah, we're close. I mean, we're, you know, they're still a little young, you know, where they can't really catch yet.
All right, still underhand.
But we're getting
dad
to that point.
Yeah.
A little bit over, you know, I toss it to them.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Can they toss it back?
Oh, they can throw it back. And catching's the hard part right now for them.
Sure. when you look at them and throw the ball to them, do they know who Rick Ankiel is?
No, they don't. They don't know.
They just know you as daddy?
Yeah, they know me as dad. They're starting to understand that I played, you know, that I played Major League Baseball, but they don't understand all of it. And that's, you know, part of the book is for that, you know, part of the reason for writing the book is for them too, because it is going to be part of their story. And I want them to understand, you know, what it was. Obviously, I'll tell them, but, you know, I want them to understand also.
One of the things that I think will be great for them and for a lot of young readers who pick up the book is learning. You know what? You get to say when it's over. Decide for yourself when it's over.
Right.
If you can keep trying and keep trying and keep trying and make that comeback, I mean, you're the poster boy for that.
Yeah. Don't give up on your dreams and don't let, you know, it's all, listen to your own heart. Don't worry about what everybody's saying. If I would have worried about what everybody else was saying, I would have never even gave the outfield thing a chance, because most people, including people that were in baseball for a long time, weren't giving me a shot and to make it whatsoever. Like, yeah, right, good luck with that, kid. You're going to do what? And I would have never made it back if I would have listened to them. So you're absolutely right.
The book is called The Phenomenon. It's called The Phenomenon, Pressure, Yips, and the Pitch That Changed My Life. It's a wonderful read. Rick Ankiel wrote it with Yahoo Sports writer Tim Brown. And I thank you for coming in and talking about it to you today.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.